Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today is Labor Day, and we'll open our show with some news about a presidential action to help workers, as well as a look back at the history of Labor Day and what's happening today right here in San Diego to help improve the lives of working people. From Sacramento, we'll have an update for you on bills to crack down on drones. Also hear about an increase in fatalities caused by drivers under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and drive safely because the sheriff will have added DUI patrols throughout this Labor Day weekend. We'll tell you about a big win for water ratepayers in a lawsuit between the County Water Authority and the Metropolitan Water Authority in Los Angeles. We'll also have news from a recent Caltrans forum about the staggering cost of repairing our state's crumbling infrastructure, including highways right here in San Diego County. Now, for all of you sports fans out there in East County and San Diego, today we'll be replaying our interview with Dan Jagiri, otherwise known as the Bolt Man, and with antitrust attorney James Quinn. Jagiri wants the city to file an antitrust lawsuit to keep the Chargers from bolting to Los Angeles, and Quinn says he thinks the city could have a winning case. We've also got responses now from the Chargers and the city that we'll be sharing with you on today's show, so stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Just in time for Labor Day, President Barack Obama has signed an executive order granting paid sick leave to hundreds of thousands of workers for federal contractors. The U.S. Department of Labor has set up a special section on its website devoted to Labor Day news. When workers prosper, the economy prospers too, the Labor Department's website states. Shared prosperity is not just about economic fairness, but also national strength. But as Americans celebrate the holiday, many are unaware of the origins of Labor Day, which has its roots in the Industrial Revolution. Back then, many U.S. workers toiled 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. Wages were low, and factory workers included children as young as 5 years old, slaving away amid often dangerous and unsanitary conditions. In an editorial titled Labor Works for Us, San Diego County Democratic Party Chair Francine Busby writes of those early industrial workers, no longer willing to accept the widespread exploitation and abuses enforced by iron-fisted owners who built impregnable monopolies and bought off corrupt politicians, workers began to fight back. Risking unemployment, deprivation, and physical assaults, they began to organize. Many events turned violent during this period, like the Haymarket riot of 1886, which led to the deaths of many workers in Chicago. Voices of those calling for reforms grew, however, giving rise to the labor movement in America. The first Labor Day parade was held in 1882 in New York, with 10,000 workers marching. Those efforts led to passage of legislation including child labor laws, workplace safety regulations, minimum wage, overtime pay, bans on discrimination in hiring, sick leave requirements, and workers' compensation for those who are injured on the job. Today, most workers in the United States have job protections even if they don't belong to unions. Unions helped lift workers out of poverty and built a strong middle class. The number of union members declined in recent years, but it's now on the rise again. Busby notes, just this week, Uber drivers and franchise employees won the right to be considered employees with the right to organize rather than being regarded as contract workers. Unions have also fought for social and economic justice movements, such as the Civil Rights Act. Right here in San Diego, pro-labor forces helped pass a living wage, reduce industrial pollution in Barrio Logan, and pass bonds to fund public schools and infrastructure projects. Next up, local unions are pushing to raise the minimum wage and health care access for all workers. On behalf of all of us at KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, we wish you, your family, and co-workers a happy Labor Day weekend. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
An estimated 700,000 drones are expected to be sold in the U.S. this year to hobbyists, a 63% increase over last year, the Consumer Electronics Association reports. Now the California legislature is scrambling to enact laws to restrict some uses of those drones after numerous complaints of safety and privacy concerns. The state Senate has sent a bill by Senator Ted Gaines to the governor that would make it a crime to fly a drone less than 350 feet above private property without permission of the owner. Gaines said, quote, "Privacy issues, especially in today's fast-paced internet and technology era, are among the most important policy issues facing Californians. We must protect the public's right to privacy and, more importantly, their safety," unquote. Gaines has stayed focused on the issue of drones. Another measure that he introduced would ban drones over prisons. The bill comes after a prison in Maryland found efforts to smuggle contraband to prisoners using a drone. And yet another bill, SB 167, which was also co-authored by Gaines, would criminalize flying drones near firefighting aircraft and give fire or law enforcement officials the right to disable such drones. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Deadly drunk driving crashes have spiked this summer, killing 11 people since May, 6 in August alone. District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis says this has been a summer of shame when it comes to fatal DUIs. She calls the conduct of drivers who've caused the crashes horrific, adding, "We've had drunk drivers driving the wrong way on the highway, individuals consuming alcohol for hours before getting behind the wheel, and a young mother driving with her children in the car while using drugs. Tragically, lives have been lost because of these preventable crimes, which should serve as a wake-up call to anyone even thinking about driving under the influence," the DA concludes. Law enforcement leaders will be cracking down on suspected DUI drivers as we head into Labor Day weekend through added sobriety checkpoints and a no-tolerance approach to impaired driving. Sheriff Bill Gore says drunk driving is a preventable crime. He warns, "You will go to jail if our deputies stop you for driving under the influence." 1 year ago, the DA's office launched a DUI homicide unit to prosecute fatalities and serious injuries. The unit has been so busy they have had to bring in additional prosecutors. Last year, over 12,000 DUI-related cases were prosecuted in the San Diego County, including 17 fatality cases. Despite the rise in fatal DUI crashes this summer, there is some good news. Since 2010, misdemeanors DUI prosecutions countywide have gone down 29%. And one reason could be that people who are out drinking are increasingly using ride services like Uber and Lyft. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tasha Matthews.
The San Diego County Water Authority is owed more than $188 million plus interest from the Los Angeles-based Metropolitan Water District. A judge has affirmed in a final ruling which found Metropolitan charged illegal rates to the San Diego District from 2011 to 2014. The ruling was made by San Francisco Superior Court Judge Curtis Carnot in a lawsuit brought by the Water Authority in a dispute over rates for transporting water from the Colorado River to San Diego through the MWD's distribution system. The MWD is the primary water wholesaler for the state of California, but San Diego water officials have been trying to diversify their supply by acquiring Colorado River water, expanding the San Francisco Reservoir in East County, and buying water from the Carlsbad desalination plant, which is due to begin operating this fall. Mark Weston, chairman of the County Water Authority's board, in a media release says of the ruling, "After 5 years in court, we have prevailed on the two main points of our main lawsuit, that MWD has systematically overcharged San Diego region's ratepayers while shorting our rights to MWD." Weston adds that the ruling affirms our efforts to protect San Diego County ratepayers, adding, "We will continue to need support from civic and business groups as we fight MWD, expected appeals, and new strategies to overcharge this region." The Times of San Diego also reports that a spokesman for the MWD, Bob Muir, said the ruling was not surprising and confirmed that his agency planned to appeal. The Water Authority intends to file a motion asking to recover attorney's fees and other costs from the MWD. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell. The San Diego County Water Authority is owed more than $188 million plus interest from the Los Angeles-based Metropolitan Water District. A judge has affirmed in a final ruling which found Metropolitan charged illegal rates to the San Diego District from 2011 to 2014. The ruling was made by San Francisco Superior Court Judge Curtis Carnot in a lawsuit brought by the Water Authority in a dispute over rates for transporting water from the Colorado River to San Diego through the MWD's distribution system. The MWD is the primary water wholesaler for the state of California, but San Diego water officials have been trying to diversify their supply by acquiring Colorado River Water, expanding the San Jacinto Reservoir in East County, and buying water from the Carlsbad Desalination Plant, which is due to begin operating this fall. Mark Weston, chairman of the County Water Authority's board, in a media release says of the ruling, "After 5 years in court, we have prevailed on the two main points of our main lawsuit, that MWD has systematically overcharged San Diego region's ratepayers while shorting our rights to MWD." Weston adds that the ruling affirms our efforts to protect San Diego County ratepayers, adding, "We will continue to need support from civic and business groups as we fight MWD, expected appeals, and new strategies to overcharge this region." The Times of San Diego also reports that a spokesman for the MWD, Bob Muir, said the ruling was not surprising and confirmed that his agency planned to appeal. The Water Authority intends to file a motion asking to recover attorney's fees and other costs from the MWD. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Ed Beretta. I'm here on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, recording at our studio at the East County Wellness Center. And today, my very special guest is Dan Jaregi, a.k.a. the Bolt Man. And we're here to talk on the stadium issue and a potential antitrust lawsuit that Chargers fans are asking the city to file against the NFL. Dan, thanks for coming. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on board.
We want to get to know you a little bit, Dan. Why don't you tell us a little bit how you became the Bolt Man and why you choose to don the costume and get out there and root on your team?
You know, the history with Boltman, initially it started back in 95 when the Chargers went to the Super Bowl, and that's when Boltman evolved. And the character's taken a different form throughout the years. You know, it's been, what, 95, and here we are in 2015. And some of the fans, the season ticket holders back in 95 and 96 probably remember the older character on the field. It was a full body pod. And then, like I said, the transition as he's evolved has changed, and now he looks like what he does today. And a lot of reasons for the changes, the mobility, visibility, I mean, the list goes on. But yeah, it's something that I truly enjoy doing as a passion. I'm a passionate Charger fan, you know, born and raised here in San Diego, and you know, I'm really committed to supporting our San Diego Chargers. We all have a love for our Chargers as fans, and I don't put myself above anybody. Yeah, my suit's a little more elaborate than some of the fans wear at a game, but, you know, we're all on the same playing field, and I don't put myself above anybody else. And I don't claim to be the mascot for the Chargers. However, I was at one time. I just enjoy doing it as a fan and getting out there and supporting our team and just, you know, try to create an energy and an excitement in the stadium during games and try to create a noise level to help our Chargers out in the field.
Yeah, so I was going to say that I really love the costume. The look of the costume is really awesome. Yeah, I think the fans need something like that in San Diego. I mean, we had a chicken for a while. That, you know, that's pretty cool. But yeah, the Boltman definitely is the way to go. Yeah, I think that it's important for fans to get excited about their local sports teams because San Diego is sort of a tough market. We have so much stuff we can go do, go to the beach, those kind of things. So having someone like you, I think, is important. And I'm glad that, you know, you have that humble approach to it. It's really all about the team, right? About the game, about winning that game and helping the team out by making that noise. So we appreciate you, Boltman. Thank you for coming in. So the current environment in the NFL seems to be a team can basically hold a city somewhat hostage, some would say. That might be an extreme term, but the city sort of has their hands tied while the football team decides what they want to do, where they want to go, and there's not much that us as fans can do.
Well, yeah, this is a really complicated issue. The dynamics involved here, there's a lot of moving parts, and the fans can't be tuned into everything that's going on, but it's literally been a emotional roller coaster ride with, I would say, more lows and highs. To put it in perspective, you know, when this was first announced in January and it came from Carson, not from the owners here in San Diego, you know, with a press conference, letting the Charger fans know in San Diego that, you know, that it's strictly a business move. And, I think the majority of the Charger fans probably would have, you know, obviously been on board that the Chargers are basically making a decision here. If things don't work out in San Diego, that, you know, their option is to move to LA, you know, for the business and for what's best for the Chargers. I think most fans would have been on board and backed the owners up and doing that. But the way that it came out was they didn't do a press conference. It was a bad PR move on Mark Fabiani and Dean Spanos as the owner to have the city of Carson announce it. And now Charger fans are like, what? You know, what's going on? It's kind of like your spouse cheating on you down the street with your worst enemy and you find out from your friends, you know, it's not a good feeling. So definitely. I think we all know the history from there in the last 8 months, what has taken place. And it just seems that the NFL and the Chargers are making every effort possible to move to Carson. Or, you know, who knows? It could be Inglewood. And last minute, you know, it could be that the Chargers team up with the Rams in Inglewood. So there's a lot of dynamics involved here, a lot of moving pieces, and no one really knows what's going to happen. But as fans, we're going to make a stand. So that's why we're initiating demand letters to our city attorney.
You sent a demand letter on June 18th to Jan Goldsmith, the city attorney, requesting an antitrust lawsuit for abuse of monopoly power on the part of the Chargers owners. Is that correct?
Well, correct. It would be the lawsuit would be filed against the NFL for abuse of monopoly power. Now, okay. Some people would say, well, what's an antitrust lawsuit? And to put it in layman's terms, what it is these laws were created back in like 1890. The Sherman Antitrust Act is laws that were created to protect the consumers from big corporations, from keeping the markets fair and balanced. So when you have these corporations that are abusing the system, there's nothing wrong with monopoly. But when you abuse the monopoly, and in the case with the Chargers and the NFL, there's 32 teams. So they can monopolize the 32 teams on where they will play in what cities. And so when there's only 32 teams, everybody wants a team in their state or even in their city. So when a team like the Chargers and the NFL are using Carson as leverage and they're putting all kinds of obstacles in the way when the city of San Diego is making best efforts to keep the Chargers here, those obstacles that the Chargers and the NFL are putting on the city of San Diego, those trigger the antitrust lawsuit.
Okay.
And someone would say, well, what are the Chargers doing? Right? I mean,
yeah,
they're going to say,
yeah.
Well, what are the Chargers doing that's violating antitrust?
What exactly is it that's violating the trust?
Okay, so if you were to play devil's advocate and you were to say, okay, what is the city doing and what is the Chargers doing to come to best efforts to negotiate to get a deal done so that they can comply with the NFL bylaws in their constitution? Because they do have bylaws on relocation. There's an Article 8.5 and an Article 4.3. You can Google NFL relocation bylaws and it'll state in there what the NFL and their teams are and their club members are supposed to do and moving forward with relocation. You know, they have to make best efforts to come to the city that they're playing in and negotiate in good faith. Now, if you were to be the devil's advocate and you're wanting to say, well, okay, what has the city of San Diego done so far? Well, you could start with they put the mayor since January has done more than what the city of San Diego has done in 14 years. I think we all agree there. Yeah, Mayor Kevin Faulkner. He's done an awesome job in spearheading this. Now, he put together a task force, the city, with some key players, some intelligent people that are talented. Jim Stieg, one of the heavy players.
City Stadium Advocacy Group, right?
Yeah, CSAG.
CSAG, that's
yeah. And the mayor put a great team, a 9-member team, and like I said, Jim Stieg, one of the key players in there that has a tremendous amount of experience with Super Bowls, and the Super Bowls are what they are today. Because he plays a big role in how they've evolved. So you have a city that has put a stadium group together. They put a finance plan together. They met all the requests that the NFL and the Chargers, including this new environmental impact report.
Right. Which Mark Fabiani, who is a Chargers spokesman, he's been claiming that it's very unlikely to pass the legal standards for an environmental impact report. Have they really looked at it? Or should they be making those kind of statements before? It sounds like they're sort of muddying the waters.
Well,
statements like that.
These are just obstacles that they're almost standard. Mark Fabiani makes, you know, anything that the city puts out there, Mark Fabiani is just going to, it's going to just be chopped up and throw obstacles in it, make it more difficult for the city. But the city's confident that this EIR report, environmental impact report, will have teeth in it. And even if it gets challenged, they're confident. They spent, $2.1 million in 3 weeks and they had over 200 people working on this 24/7. The city's confident, with this EIR report. So when you have the city that's done all these things, including the finance plan and...
Yeah, we've obviously engaged. The city of San Diego has engaged.
Absolutely.
Into the negotiating process, and it seems that the Chargers have been reluctant to do so.
Correct. I mean, and then the latest is that you have a special election now that'll be held in January 12th or 15th, which is critical. So the city of San Diego has clearly made best efforts to lay down the foundation of keeping the Chargers in San Diego, and they made best efforts. There's no question there. Now, for the Chargers, you know, and their defense, they're probably going to say, well, look, at, you know, we've been at it for 14 years. Okay, and they keep using that. Mark Fabiani's favorite quote is, you know, we've been at it for 14 years. But the fans can sit there and throw numbers and say, well, look, you haven't taken us to a Super Bowl in over 20, and you lost it. So, but you know what? As Charger fans, we don't care. We love our Chargers to winning and losing seasons. Our allegiance is to our team, and we support them. But we're not throwing numbers out. So if you want to throw numbers out, you know, be a little more tactical. But, yeah,
Tell us a little bit about, in order for the team to move, they're supposed to show that they've encountered hardship in their current market. Talk a little bit about that.
Correct, yeah. An NFL team, there's bylaws to the NFL on relocating. And those bylaws, the NFL Constitution clearly states that the team must have diligently engaged in good faith efforts to obtain and maintain suitable stadium facilities in their home territories in order to qualify for relocation. Now, this clearly hasn't happened. And when you read the articles, they really go into detail. There has to be hardship. Well, the San Diego Chargers, their history in the past 15 years to date, they started off at about $131 million in 2001. And today, well, last season, it was $262 million that the team has clearly made and profited.
So they literally doubled their profits.
I mean, the Chargers are ranked right in the middle out of the 32 teams as far as compatibility. So they would have a weak case proving that that they're having a hardship. And then one would say, well, what has Dean Spanos and Mark Fabiani, his point man for negotiating with the city of San Diego, what have they done? If you ask anybody, they would probably say nothing. Because there's the Chargers, the owners, have done nothing to stay in San Diego other than create these roadblocks. But one would say, well, what have they done in Carson? Well, we could start with the purchase, 11 acres for $22 million. The Chargers spearheading the signature drive to avoid the ERR report, which they were successful. That cost them $500,000 to do that. Then they hire Carmen Policy, an NFL executive that has experience in negotiating. So they bring him as an expert consultant. Numerous meetings with the mayor and city officials, all Dean Spanos's efforts are all in Carson. And Dean is obviously working side by side with Carmen Policy. Mark Fabiani's handling San Diego. So he'll just continue to throw dirt here and they build, you know, their potential location in Carson.
So yeah, it seems like really what the NFL is trying to do is get the most money for their products. And so, I mean, even to the point where Eric Gruben, the NFL executive vice president, his Twitter handle is Eric NFL Money. And that, I mean, that's just sort of a microcosm for everything that's going on. Some business people might say, well, you know, the Chargers are a business. They have the right to go make money. But what you're saying here is that we've got this constitution in place from the NFL, their own bylaws that are being violated. So now you've actually been consulting with a law firm out of New York that's had some antitrust lawsuits against the NFL in the past and been successful. This law firm, Weil, Gotshal and Manges. And attorney Jim Quinn, who is going to be talking to our editor Miriam Raftery shortly after this interview, and they're going to get more into the sort of legal side of the discussion. But tell us a little bit about where that's headed and why you consulted with this particular law firm.
Initially, I was just thinking, you know, is this legal, what the Chargers are doing? I mean, the owners, you know, holding the city of San Diego hostage, extorting is really what it is, extorting and holding us hostage. One would think, well, the only thing missing here is a gun, because this is really what's happening. Wow. So I thought, well, this can't be legal. So as I started researching, I started looking into civil cases and ran into the antitrust NFL cases, and then realized that there was a little bit of a similarity here to what took place in other antitrust lawsuits with the NFL by this law firm. So I reached out to him and was fortunate to have a good conversation with him. And, you know, we've been going back and forth. I send him information. He's requested lease agreements, the minutes involved with the lease agreement that was signed back in 2006. Because when this statement came out that we were demanding the city to file a lawsuit, the Chargers' response was that the Chargers were excluded from any lawsuits based on their 2006 lease agreement. Apparently, when the city signed that lease agreement back in 2006, it does not prevent them from suing now in 2015, because under the law, including the U.S. Supreme Court president, a party cannot waive future unknown antitrust claims because it's against public policy. Otherwise, an antitrust victim would be powerless to sue about something that they didn't know about in the future. So the Chargers' only defense when an antitrust lawsuit was brought up was based on their 2006 lease agreement. And of course, you know, Jim responded back with the statement I just made.
So Jan Goldsmith said that they weren't going to be pursuing that because of the 2006 lease agreement. But what you found in your research and consulting with this firm is that basically that's not true, that that's invalid to try to write something like that into a lease agreement.
Correct. And, you know, that information from the attorney Jim Quinn was forwarded to Jan Goldsmith. Now, originally Jan was saying, yes, that it's true the 2006 lease agreement was an absolute waiver for the Chargers for any antitrust lawsuit. But I believe, you know, now that he's being interviewed, you know, he's kind of changing the tone a little bit, saying that what the city would rather do right now is negotiate than litigate. So it would seem that now he might be in favor of an antitrust lawsuit if the Chargers fail to come to the table, which is something that I feel that the city of San Diego is in a position today, and Jim would verify this, that they can file an injunction and force the Chargers to come to the table and negotiate. Now, the injunction would be filed against the NFL. The last thing the NFL is going to want to do is be involved with litigation on an antitrust violation, because what would happen initially is, if the city of San Diego were to prevail in a case like this, this would change the future of how NFL teams relocate. And it could cost billions of dollars. This is a billion-dollar industry. I mean, they're at the $9 billion this year alone. They're expected to be at $18 billion in 4 years. So this could change the history of how teams relocate if the city were to file an antitrust lawsuit. Now, for owners, 3-5 years from now, everybody's going to want to throw their towel in the ring and say, hey, you know what? The stadium is not competing with the L.A. stadium that the Chargers got, so we're going to hold our city hostage. And it just continues and continues, and it's a revolving wheel.
Yeah, it seems like every city that has a football team is going to be facing a new stadium issue because of the way that the current atmosphere is. So I think if something can be done in this situation, perhaps it'll help with future franchises trying to do the same type of maneuver where they're sort of leave their city high and dry, looking for the best market for their bottom line. And that seems like that's sort of unethical, because really sports is about love for your team. And when you get these fans involved to the level, you know, you have the blood drives and you have all this community involvement, and then just to split, it's really not cool. Yeah. And it's happened to many, many franchises. I know as a child, I grew up in Orange County and we lost the Rams, and it was, you know, no more rooting for the Rams. And I feel like the ownership is sort of arrogant in their assumption that people are just going to root for them in LA and they're going to have all this, a lot more money available to them, when the reality is the people that really love them are going to be hurt deeply. And it's going to take a while for that to build up again up in LA. I don't think they're going to just waltz in there and, you know, this whole thing's going to go real smooth for them. I think that they might be assuming a lot. And to the point where Fabiani has even basically said that this idea of the antitrust lawsuit is a joke. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, you're going to get the legal interpretation from Jim Quinn. And I think that once you understand you know, the way he would explain it. No, it's not a joke, and the fans aren't joking.
So, Dan, let's say that the Chargers did up and leave town, and that would sort of put a halt on the stadium building process. How do you think that would impact the Aztecs and other events that use the stadium?
Well, yeah, the Aztecs will definitely be affected by it. I mean, you have the Poinsettia Bowl, the Holiday Bowl. The Aztecs play there. I mean, where would the Aztecs play if the Chargers leave? You know, if the stadium's costing $11 million a year for upkeep, I don't believe that the Aztecs have that in their budget. So, yeah, that would be a huge blow for our local Aztecs. Where would they play? It's a good question to bring up.
Yeah, there's really no other facility in the city that would be able to handle, 10,000-20,000 people like the Aztecs bring on any given Saturday. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of another good reason to keep them in town. I think people need to climb on board this issue a little bit more. People are hesitant to engage.
Yeah, the Aztecs, they play a huge role. That's a good question. Where would the Aztecs play if the Chargers were to leave? Because I don't believe the city's going to put $1.1 million stadium for the Aztecs to play. So the Aztecs would have to find a place to play. And, the Poinsettia Bowl and the Holiday Bowl, those were gone. Where else, move those. That's been tradition here in San Diego for years.
I don't think we want to see Aztecs playing at Helix High School.
No. No, that wouldn't work. That wouldn't work. No. The Chargers, they play a big role in San Diego. I mean, they provide entertainment, civic pride. They generate a lot of jobs, revenue, college bowls. The Aztecs play there. We might have to focus that this is not just a stadium for the Chargers. This is going to be a multi-use stadium. So we could use it for a lot of things. It'll be used year-round. And that's something that we're going to really have to focus on the taxpayers for San Diego, that they're going to benefit from it. We're the eighth largest city. San Diego without a football team, it could be a ghost town. And most people probably don't realize the impact economically that is going to hit San Diego when the team leaves. So hopefully, we can get, voters on board. It gets this thing approved by January, I think it was 12th, which is a critical date as well.
And that's going to be a vote basically within the city limits, not within countywide, not a countywide vote, correct?
Correct, yeah. And that date, really, it's not set in stone, because the city of San Diego has given the Chargers or the NFL till September 11th. To come to the table and negotiate, because they have to get this EIR report submitted. There's timelines, for it to be challenged. There's a lot of political things involved and a process to getting the EIR report submitted, getting a initiative to have a vote in 2016, January. So the longer the Chargers take to come to the table, which is in the Chargers' favor. Obviously, it's probably their strategy is to prolong it so that by January, because the NFL is talking about bringing the date for relocation sometime in January. So obviously, in the Chargers' favor, they would rather have the NFL select the San Diego Chargers to move to LA. And then, they can say, well, the city wasn't prepared with their IR report and they didn't get a ballot measure done for a special election on the date that they said. So the deadline that the city of San Diego would get the Chargers really, it's a good move because it brings the Chargers to the table and it gets the ballot measure to be set for that January 12th or 15th. What's going to happen if the Chargers don't come to the table? I don't believe they will, because it's in their best interest not to show up to the negotiating table and prolong it so that the NFL can move them. I think that's really the strategy here.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a lot of maneuvering that's been going on and leveraging and things like that. It seems like the city of San Diego has less leverage than the Chargers do right now, which this is sort of this movement to bring this antitrust lawsuit would definitely give the city a lot more leverage.
It would. Right now, they don't have anything. If the city were to at least, consider consulting with this law firm, send a demand letter to the NFL saying, hey, here's your options. By September 11th, on or before that date, if the Chargers fail to come to the table, then we'll be forced to file our antitrust violations against the NFL and file the injunction. That immediately, an injunction would have to be approved by a judge. The odds of that happening are pretty good because it's not a frivolous lawsuit. There's a lot of good arguments in the complaint, as we talked about earlier. And more than likely, a judge will honor an injunction. Well, that's going to be another delay of 6 months to discovery so that the Chargers can build their case, which they don't really have much in their defense other than the 14 years. And I've already went over what the city has done in good faith. So that injunction would probably be honored, and it would be a permanent injunction, and then it would go to court. And it could take 2 years, even in a fast track. You know, that this would definitely delay the Chargers moving to L.A., and it definitely throws a monkey wrench in it. And I'm just surprised that the city attorney's not taking advantage of it, and maybe he will. Maybe now that he's seeing that the strength that this idea as a legal loophole keeping the Chargers here, maybe the city might look at it and take it more serious and reach out to the law firm.
Yeah, and you know, there's also been some other talk about bringing in the Raiders as leverage into our negotiations in the city of San Diego's side. It's like working with Mark Davis. I saw on a blog about that. And there's also talk of maybe trying to retain the name in San Diego so that if the Chargers left, they might take on a new name in L.A. We have to appreciate what we have here in San Diego, because obviously L.A. is fighting hard to get a football team. There's a reason for that. They're not just willy-nilly wanting a football team. They want that revenue in-house in L.A. And the San Diego people may regret it if they let that go, and it might be too late. So as far as where we stand today, I see you guys just a few days ago, August 18th, sent a letter to Commissioner Goodell and also Anastasia Denius, the NFL's chief litigation officer. And if I could just quote from this letter real quick, it says, "Unless the NFL and the Chargers come to the table for meaningful good faith negotiations on staying in San Diego County, we will launch an initiative to have the city retain a team of experienced sports antitrust lawyers, starting with the law office of Weil, Gottschall & Manges LLP, to stop the move. This will be another legal black eye for the league in a growing list of legal problems with the start of the 2015 season." Unquote. So have you heard back from the NFL?
We haven't heard back. No.
Okay. And it's been a few days. You'd think that they would want to respond to something like this. It's potential lawsuit about antitrust violations. That should be a big deal to them. That silence maybe says something.
Well, yeah, I think it admits that, you know, that they have some serious problems coming. And, you know, we did receive a receipt that they received it. So we know they received it. Maybe for them, no answer is a good answer or response. But I think the letter, the way it was written and structured, was everything we talked about. All the violations, how the city's, you know, coming to the table with the good faith negotiations, the Chargers are failing. And the NFL, they're part of it. They play a big role, you know. And real quick, wrapping this thing up, is that when Eric Grubin came to San Diego, he's the VP executive for the NFL, he laid down the ground rules for the Chargers, saying that if there were going to be any potential for the Chargers to stay in San Diego, that the city would really have to make efforts in producing a special election. They had requested it in 2015, but obviously that wasn't going to happen. So they wanted a special election in 2015. In addition to that, they wanted the Chargers wanted the finance plan not to have any mixed development around the stadium, which is unfair because that's how their, you know, the original CSAG plan had $250 million.
Yeah.
So I think they did that on purpose. In addition to that, they had requested that the Chargers keep any PSL or naming rights, the personal seat licenses, the PSL, and any naming rights to the stadium. All those revenues would go to the Chargers. So it really put the city of San Diego in a position where it was hard to, you know, try to counter that, but they went ahead and did it anyway. So the new plan now is, you know, they would generate this cash flow through revenue bonds, you know, possibly selling the sports arena. But either way, the Chargers removed that $250 million from the mixed development around the queue, and they're going to come up with ways of doing it. They've said they do it, and I believe they will. They, you know, they're very confident about where they're going to get these revenues from, whether they're bonds, and the EIR report, getting it completed in the timeline that the NFL and the Chargers are requested.
So from your standpoint, you think the city has a good position to bring the Chargers to the table, and that basically this potential antitrust lawsuit would be extra guarantee that they'll come in and talk to the city?
Well, we're hoping that the demand letter that was sent will send shockwaves to the NFL and saying, hey, look, you know, we're serious here. San Diego's very serious, and so is our Charger fans. And there needs to be good efforts, and it's probably in their best interest for the NFL to bring the Chargers back to the negotiating table and do it within the timeline, not to purposely delay it longer than the September 11th deadline, because obviously that's going to benefit the Chargers if they can continue to delay that. you know, if I was a betting man right now, I would say the Chargers aren't coming to the table on September 11th because we know that what their motive is to delay it. And then, you know, there won't be no time for a special election. And then they're going to say, well, we tried and you guys didn't do your job at the timeline that we requested. But how can they say that when they're not coming to the table? So really, it'll backfire on the NFL and the Chargers.
Well, hopefully we can retain the team in San Diego because I am a Charger fan. So on behalf of Charger fans, I want to thank you, Dan, for taking on this role. I know it's not easy. You're taking on the beast. So I really appreciate you coming down, and we'll look for Boltman to be out at the games this season.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to just focus on the game and the regular season and just, you know, get away from the politics and all the legal stuff.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Once again, on East County Magazine, this has been Ed Barena with Dan Jeregi, a.k.a. the Boltman.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Now, we've just been speaking with the Boltman, and now we have on the phone from New York City, James Quinn with the law office of Weil, Gottschall, and Manges. He is an attorney who has sued the NFL many times, and he has a winning track record. And he's here to tell us all about the case against the Chargers and the NFL. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
Now, we've been speaking with the Boltman, Dan Jeregi, and he believes that the Chargers are violating both the NFL Charter and the Sherman Antitrust Act. As an attorney with expertise in this area, do you agree with him, and if so, why?
The antitrust laws are an effort to ensure that there's competition among different competitors. Here the competitors are NFL owners, and the competition is for where the franchises will be placed. And in this instance, the NFL, at least on its face, owners have gotten together and decided that, as a group, that they're going to encourage the Chargers to leave San Diego and to move to Los Angeles. And that raises serious antitrust issues.
Okay. You were known for suing the NFL successfully and winning, including a landmark case that gave players the right to become free agents after a court ruled that the NFL had violated that very same Sherman Antitrust Act. And you said that you would be willing to handle a case against the NFL over the Chargers situation. So can you tell us just a little bit more about your own background and how many antitrust cases you've handled and how many lawsuits against the NFL specifically?
Well, over the years, I've handled, you know, probably dozens of antitrust cases, at least four or five against the NFL. So far, I haven't lost. I first got involved in sports back in the early 1970s in antitrust relating to the Oscar Robertson lawsuit. And since then, I've brought antitrust lawsuits in hockey and football and basketball as well. So far, successful.
Very good. So you've got a great winning track record, it sounds like. Now, the city of San Diego, they did really a Herculean job of pulling together a detailed proposal, complete with renderings of a new stadium and a plan to put the funding question on the ballot early next year. James, why do you think the Chargers have refused to negotiate in good faith, given the risk of litigation that they could lose?
Well, because of money. I think that they've decided that they think they can make more money in Los Angeles. And the sense I have right now is that they have one foot out the door.
Wow. How much money do you think the city could win if they were to file a suit?
You know, part of it would be depending on whether or not they could get an injunction, which can often be difficult to accomplish. But,
so just an injunction to just halt them from leaving, period, have a judge just say no.
Right, but that could be an uphill battle because it can be a difficult claim to make. On the other hand, if they were ultimately to leave and then the city were to sue the Chargers for damages, it could be in the multi-million dollars.
Now, City Attorney Jan Goldsmith was asked by another media outlet a while back about this very issue, and he said that
first of all, that he prefers right now negotiating rather than litigation, but he also said the city's 2006 lease with the Chargers had a clause that prohibited such litigation. So how would you get around that issue?
Because I've seen that clause. Under the Supreme Court law, you cannot waive a future antitrust violation. So they couldn't waive back in 2006 the violation that was going to occur in 2015. You can't do it under the law. It's against public policy.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that important point. Now, Mark Fabiani, who has headed up the Chargers' effort to find the new stadium, has said in another media interview that a lawsuit would be, quote, meritless because, in his words, no judge will view the city's proposal for a quickie EIR, environmental impact report, is in any way reasonable, and because we've made 9 separate proposals over 14 years to try to find a solution. Can you please comment on that?
Yes, it is a complicated factual situation, but most of what he's saying is irrelevant to what the lawsuit would be about, that is, whether or not the NFL owners have jointly got together to boycott the city of San Diego. So the past history, frankly, is not all that relevant.
Okay. So the lawsuit, it sounds like, it could increase the odds of the Chargers putting any moving plans on hold. Is the idea basically to keep them here, or is this more about getting compensation for the city's losses and the loss to fans, however you calculate that, if the Chargers just decide to move anyway?
You know, I think it's more about trying to keep the Chargers here by getting their attention and having them begin negotiating the fee.
How likely is it that the city would win cases against the Chargers and, for that matter, the NFL for antitrust and violation of the NFL charter also if the city does decide to sue?
The antitrust cases are very complex and they can be lengthy and expensive. So it's difficult always to a clear percentage evaluation. But I would certainly say that the city would have at least a 50-50 chance of being successful.
Well, those are pretty good odds. So if the city does win a lawsuit, can a judge force the Chargers to stay here, or can they just come back and negotiate some more and still find an excuse to leave anyway and just say we did more negotiating and it's still not enough?
That kind of question is, again, very difficult to answer. It would depend on the judge and ultimately what the judge thought, whether or not the Chargers and the league were acting in good faith.
Have there been other cities that have successfully sued, or for that matter, fans anywhere, and forced a team to stay that was trying to bolt and move elsewhere?
You know, the history of that is we've had situations where, as you recall, the Raiders moved from Oakland to Los Angeles and then back again. There was litigation there. None of it ever came out in a clear-cut way. There's no clear precedent with regard to this kind of lawsuit.
Is there any merit in the Chargers' claim? They're not here today again, but they're claiming the city just didn't do enough and now this is just too little, too late. How would you respond to that?
Again, the antitrust laws are designed to prevent competitors agreeing not to compete, and in this case, agreeing to boycott. And under these circumstances, the past history, too little, too late, is less significant than whether or not you're acting in concert and in violation of the antitrust law.
Okay, so basically it's collusion, in your opinion, that the NFL has engaged in here.
Correct.
So, to be a devil's advocate for a moment, not everybody in the town supports building a new stadium. There's a lot of fans that certainly want to keep the Chargers, but there's also people like Councilwoman Marty Emerald, who said that she thinks the money might be better spent on things like building more fire stations and fixing potholes. Why should the NFL or the Chargers wait and risk losing the offer in L.A. when the city's proposal hinges on a ballot initiative where fans could vote yes to keep the Chargers and fund a new stadium, but they could also vote no?
Look, if the Chargers really wanted to, you know, act in good faith in San Diego for their entire existence, waiting a year one way or another is not going to, the world's not going to end. I don't see
good
why
point.
They wouldn't allow 2 months to go by to see whether or not they can, in fact, get the stadium that they want in San Diego.
Very good point. Now, another important question. The conventional wisdom has been that if the Chargers leave, the NFL itself has basically threatened them and said San Diego would likely never get another pro football team. If the Chargers do move to L.A., would a lawsuit give the city leverage to try to force the NFL to let them keep the Chargers' name and maybe bring another team to San Diego down the road?
Yes, I think it would be significant leverage because the mere fact that the NFL stated that if the city doesn't do what they want, they'll be boycotted for forever. In and of itself may violate the antitrust law.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like blackmail, doesn't it? So,
yes.
I'm wondering what else Chargers fans should know about the situation, and is there anything that the fans themselves can do to keep the Chargers in town? What if the city doesn't file a lawsuit? If there's some rich fan out there that really wants to keep the Chargers, could they file their own suit? Or is there anything else they can
do? I just think they have to put the pressure on the politicians. I don't think the fan lawsuit would have the legs.
And why is that?
Because the fans, secondly, don't have standing under the NHS to bring that kind of lawsuit.
Okay, so because the city spent all the money on all of this and it's the city that would lose the money, then the city has the best standing.
Yes.
Okay. And actually, of course, the fans are also taxpayers, most of them. So maybe, you know, taxpayers bringing pressure on the politicians to say, we want to get our tax dollars worth here. We don't want to see the city take a hit and a losses of our tax dollars would be an influential way to go, perhaps?
Again, I think the critical thing from the fan standpoint is to put pressure on the politicians using whatever pressure they can come up with. The ballot box is usually the most important one to politicians.
Very good point. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today. Listeners, we've been speaking with Jim Quinn, who is an antitrust lawyer in New York City, about the odds of the city filing a lawsuit and perhaps winning a lawsuit to keep the Chargers in town or get money if they leave. I want to thank you so much, and I want to ask, do you have any last words, Jim, that you would like our listeners to know?
Look, I just wish the fans of San Diego good luck in keeping their team.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Jim, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio.
Take care.
Now, after our interviews with the Bolt Man and Attorney James Quinn were taped, we did get responses from the Chargers and from the city attorney's office, although the NFL never did respond. Mark Fabiani is special counsel for the Chargers, and he's also a former senior official of the Justice Department, as well as an ex-White House special counsel to President Bill Clinton. Although Mr. Quinn says the city's contract clause with the Chargers that barred litigation is unenforceable due to a Supreme Court precedent, Fabiano says he disagrees with the antitrust lawyer. Fabiano says the team's lease with the city of San Diego explicitly prohibits the city from doing anything, including filing lawsuits of any kind, to prevent the team from relocating. The team bargained with the city in 2004 when the lease was renegotiated, and we gave up important lease provisions, such as the requirement that the city maintain Qualcomm as a state-of-the-art stadium, in return for the prohibition on lawsuits, he says. Now, as you heard earlier, Quinn says that if the city files a suit, a judge could issue an injunction ordering the Chargers to stay in town, at least until fans weigh in on whether or not they will approve an initiative to fund building the stadium. That's an initiative the city wants to put on the ballot. We asked Fabiano why the Chargers won't wait until voters weigh in on funding a stadium early next year. He says the city proposed to complete an environmental impact report in just 1 week, that's to meet the Chargers' deadline, a process that normally takes 12 to 18 months. Fabiano says of that, this was not an acceptable solution for the team because it is a solution that in the history of California has never been tried before. We were unwilling to go along with the city's plan, a plan that has been widely criticized by independent experts, he adds. Now, City Attorney Jan Goldsmith's assistant, Jerry Braun, told us that the city attorney has said everything he wants to say on this topic. He added, though, Mr. Quinn's enthusiasm for his legal strategies has not escaped our attention. Once he has filed his lawsuit, we will review it. We may have more to say at that time. But Quinn says it's the city that has the strongest standing to file a suit, not fans or any individual. That's because the city has invested money to fund studies, stadium plans, and an environmental impact review, while in his view the Chargers have failed to negotiate in good faith. The city also stands to lose significant revenues if the team bolts to Los Angeles, as it's currently negotiating to do. Braun fired back, it appears that anyone who has purchased a Chargers product has standing to sue, and attached a checklist for antitrust cases that seems to bolster that argument. But while it's true a fan may have standing to sue under the Sherman Antitrust Act, whether any fan could prove substantial financial damages is questionable, whereas the city presumably could. Losing the Chargers likely also means losing future Super Bowls and Holiday Bowls, substantial potential revenue sources, and in addition, wasting money on stadium plans, studies, and an environmental impact report. the city has given the Chargers a September 11th deadline to commit to stay in San Diego, so the city can meet its deadline to put the funding measure on the ballot next year. But Dan Juragi, the Bolt man, told us he wouldn't bet on the Chargers coming to the table on September 11th absent some legal muscle. If the Bolt man prevails in getting his initiative on the ballot, then fans and voters may ultimately have the final say on whether public money should be spent on legal action to try and recover taxpayers' money and keep the fans' favorite football team in town. This is Miriam Raftery for KNSJ. Now, after our interviews with the Bolt man and attorney James Quinn were taped, we did get responses from the Chargers and from the city attorney's office, although the NFL never did respond. Mark Fabiani is special counsel for the Chargers, and he's also a former senior official in the Justice Department, as well as an ex-White House special counsel to President Bill Clinton. Although Mr. Quinn says the city's contract clause with the Chargers that barred litigation is unenforceable due to a Supreme Court precedent, Fabiano says he disagrees with the antitrust lawyer. Fabiano says the team's lease with the City of San Diego explicitly prohibits the city from doing anything, including filing lawsuits of any kind, to prevent the team from relocating. The team bargained with the city in 2004 when the lease was renegotiated, and we gave up important lease provisions, such as the requirement that the city maintain Qualcomm as a state-of-the-art stadium, in return for the prohibition on lawsuits, he says. Now, as you heard earlier, Quinn says that if the city files a suit, a judge could issue an injunction ordering the Chargers to stay in town, at least until fans weigh in on whether or not they will approve an initiative to fund building the stadium. That's an initiative the city wants to put on the ballot. We asked Fabiano why the Chargers won't wait until voters weigh in on funding a stadium early next year. He says the city proposed to complete an environmental impact report in just 1 week, that's to meet the Chargers' deadline, a process that normally takes 12 to 18 months. Fabiano says of that, this was not an acceptable solution for the team because it is a solution that in the history of California has never been tried before. We were unwilling to go along with the city's plan, a plan that has been widely criticized by independent experts, he adds. Now, City Attorney Jan Goldsmith's assistant, Jerry Braun, told us that the city attorney has said everything he wants to say on this topic. He added, though, Mr. Quinn's enthusiasm for his legal strategies has not escaped our attention. Once he has filed his lawsuit, we will review it. We may have more to say at that time. But Quinn says it's the city that has the strongest standing to file a suit, not fans or any individual. That's because the city has invested money to fund studies, stadium plans, and an environmental impact review, while in his view, the Chargers have failed to negotiate in good faith. The city also stands to lose significant revenues if the team bolts to Los Angeles, as it's currently negotiating to do. Braun fired back, it appears that anyone who has purchased a Chargers product has standing to sue, and attached a checklist for antitrust cases that seems to bolster that argument. But while it's true a fan may have standing to sue under the Sherman Antitrust Act, whether any fan could prove substantial financial damages is questionable, whereas the city presumably could. Losing the Chargers likely also means losing future Super Bowls and Holiday Bowls, substantial potential revenue sources, and in addition, wasting money on stadium plans, studies, and an environmental impact report. The city has given the Chargers a September 11th deadline to commit to stay in San Diego, so the city can meet its deadline to put the funding measure on the ballot next year. But Dan Juragi, the Bolt man, told us he wouldn't bet on the Chargers coming to the table on September 11th absent some legal muscle. If the Bolt man prevails in getting his initiative on the ballot, then fans and voters may ultimately have the final say on whether public money should be spent on legal action to try and recover taxpayers' money and keep the fans' favorite football team in town. This is Miriam Raftery for KNSJ. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykle, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.